And maybe the song which could be a theme for the whole world. I'm gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. I'm gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And I was privileged to spend a little time with Gore Vidal, particularly during the 2000 and 2004 elections. I was a straight man to Gore Vidal at a lot of political house parties and fundraisers. It wasn't as if Gore was thrilled with his hapless cousin Al Gore or John Kerry. But as an historian, he was appalled by George W. Bush, who history will surely judge as perhaps the worst and most destructive president of the United States. It was so obvious that Gore loved politics and talking politics. Of course, he did this all for free. His only stipulation was a tall glass of good scotch. Let's play some clips from the Pacifica archive, starting in 1994. A conversation with Jessica Mitford, of course, Jessica Mitford from the famous or infamous British aristocratic family, the Mitfords, speaking with Gore Vidal in 1994.
Now, this is a tough one. Based on your careful study of human history, how might the rise of fundamentalism in the world play out?
Well, fundamentalism is a sign of a breakdown in the economy of a state. It's wherever there's great poverty and you cannot look to the rulers for money, for succor, for anything, you will get God in one form or another. I have always thought that a great disaster that befell the West was monotheism. We were doing very well before then in the Greco-Roman world and older civilizations. We're about to see, you young ones here will see it, I shan't, but I see the beginnings of it, the rise of China. Well, there you have a society that's 3,000 years older than we are. It's Confucian, and Confucius is an atheistic system of thought and of education. Rather better, I would have thought, for a people as mixed as Americans than these demented churches that we have. But our churches would have been a lot less demented if we had not exempted them from taxation. I knew a science fiction writer years ago when I was first starting out as a writer, most unattractive person I think I've ever met, and that is the god, L. Ron Hubbard. And you can't tax them. These Justice Department just found that they were a genuine religion. So we have yet another force in our lives, which could be undone by taxation. But the rise of fundamentalism in the world, I think, has to do with really entropy. We're running out of everything. The next millennium will really be a struggle for water. It'll be who has control over the two ice caps and is getting water down, and there are going to be terrible wars over water. Now, that's a serious subject, unlike monotheism.
Now, here's a very good one. With April 15th approaching, would you condone non-payment of income taxes as a legitimate form of dissent? If so, how?
Well, we tried that at the time of the Vietnam War. I was co-chairman of something called the People's Party with Dr. Spock, and they will put you in jail. I think that if it were done on a sufficiently large scale, you could probably bring the government to its knees, but that takes organization. There's something, what is optimistic in what is rather a dark horizon, has been the rise of computers, cassettes, instant communication is now possible. So you could really organize 1 million people in a day or two. Whereas before you had to mail letters, you'd have to wait, you'd have to do this, do that. There are a lot of things that can really happen suddenly. If you say to the government, if you don't cut 30% out of what you're now spending on military procurement, we won't pay 30% of our tax. They can't put 10 million people in jail. They will try. Have you heard the latest that the army camps, now that they are dumping the military personnel back into the civilian population, the generals knowing that the politicians will be blamed for this, they're now talking about using the military camps for drug offenders. So tax offenders might end up there as well. But I think it is a good ploy, but it has to be done on a large scale. I not only pay American taxes, I think I paid for the stealth bomber that year. %38, thank you.
And that was Gore Vidal speaking in discussion with Jessica Mitford in 1994. And Gore Vidal, of course, was a World War II veteran, a member of the Greatest Generation. I remember we were speaking together at an event at the time of Israel's war with Hezbollah, and he was telling me his war stories from the Aleutian Islands in World War II. He was obviously proud of his service, and of course, he did serve in the war for the United States. And people like John Wayne and Ronald Reagan, of course, are the icons of patriotism, but it's worth noting that Gore Vidal was a veteran. Here he is in 2002 talking about his military service.
I put together a few notes of some things that we might talk about, think about, might explain the predicament that the country is in. Very wise people have seen it coming. I'm not one of them, but there were others along the way. I'd like to start by saying that one of the places I come from, I belong to a minority that is one of the smallest in the United States, and with every day it grows smaller. I am a veteran of World War II, and I can recall thinking when I got out of the Army in 1946, well, that's that. We won. And those who come after us will never need to do this again. Then came the two mad wars of imperial vanity, Korea and Vietnam. They were bitter for us, not to mention for the so-called enemy. Next, we were enrolled in a perpetual war against what seemed like the enemy of the month club. Remember Noriega? All the drugs in the world went through that man, and Bush Sr. went down, killed a lot of Panamanians, arrested him, put him on trial in the United States, which had no jurisdiction, and locked him up for life. We still don't know quite why, and the drugs are flowing with the same ease as they did before. Gaddafi, remember him? We did get to kill his daughter. And somehow his eyeliner had offended us. I mean, we pick our enemies shrewdly. This perpetual war kept major revenues going to military procurement, secret police, and the bribing of warlords, while withholding money from us, the taxpayers, with our petty concerns for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But no matter how corrupt our system became over the last century, and I lived through three quarters of it,
We still held on to the Constitution and, above all, to the Bill of Rights. I have been discouraged at times, like all of you, but I always felt that the Republic was upon a firm foundation and that no one could seriously undermine it. I never once believed that I would ever see a day like this one, when a great part of the nation, forget the polls, it is a great part of the nation, of we, the people, should be opposed to an arbitrary and secret government preparing wars for us to fight in. Sensibly, they leave the fighting to us. During Vietnam, Bush fled to the Texas Air Force. Cheney, when asked why he had avoided service in Vietnam, replied, "I had other priorities." Well, so did 13 million of us 60 years ago. Priorities that many were never able to fulfill.
And that is Gore Vidal speaking in 2002. And let's now go to another clip of Gore Vidal. This is on the eve of the Iraq War in 2004 at a peace rally in Los Angeles.
How did human events bring us here today and all across the country? We can certainly blame the oil and gas hustlers who have hijacked the government from presidency to Congress to, most ominously, the judiciary. It was Benjamin Franklin, that nice, witty, plump gentleman, who saw our future most clearly back in 1787, when he was a delegate to the Constitutional Convention at Philadelphia. He was old, he was dying, he was not well enough to speak, but he had prepared a text which a friend read. It is so dark a statement that most school histories omit his key words. Benjamin Franklin urged the convention to accept the Constitution despite all its faults. It might, he said, provide good government in the short term and may be a blessing to the people if well administered. And I believe he said that this is likely to be well administered for a course of years and only end in despotism, as other forms have done before it, when the people have so become corrupted as to need despotic government, being incapable of any other. Franklin's prophecy came true in December 2000. When the Supreme Court bulldozed its way through the Constitution in order to select as their president the loser in the presidential election of that year. Despotism is now securely in the saddle. The old republic is a shadow of itself, and we now stand in the glare of a nuclear world empire with a government that sees as its true enemy, we the people, deprived of our electoral franchise. War is the usual aim of despots, and war is what we are going to get, unless with help from well-worshippers in new old Europe and from ourselves awake at last. We must persuade this peculiar administration that they are acting entirely on their own and against all of our common history. The other night on CNN, I brought the admirable Aaron Brown to a full stop. Not with Benjamin Franklin. I feel the history lesson coming on. But with President John Quincy Adams, who said in the 1820s, on the subject of our fighting to liberate Greece from Turkey, he said, "The United States goes not abroad in search of monsters to destroy. If the United States took up all foreign affairs, she might become the dictatress of the world. But she would no longer be the ruler of her own spirit." So let us regain our lost spirit, and should we be allowed in the year 2004 to hold a presidential election here in the homeland, we shall realize that the only regime change that need concern our regained spirit or soul is in Washington.
And I'm afraid that that's all the time we have for the clip of Gore Vidal speaking in 2004 at a Los Angeles peace rally on the eve of the Iraq War. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Brooke Peterson. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Quiet voice.